All right. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to this March 14th meeting of the Herring River Executive Council. I think customarily we invite our Executive Council members to introduce themselves. Maybe we'll start this afternoon with representatives of the Cape Cod National Seashore.
Good afternoon. I'm Jennifer Flynn, and it is my honor to serve as the superintendent for Cape Cod National Seashore.
Jennifer.
Jeff Sanders, I'm the Chief of Natural Resource Management for Cape Cod National Seashore.
Thank you, Jeff. And now for the town of Wellfleet.
Debbie Freeman, I'm appointed by the town of Wellfleet. I sit on the town of Wellfleet Board of Health and was chair of the Conservation Commission previously.
And Janet Reinhart, I was a select board member for 9 years or so. I can't remember. Recently retiring from everything, except this is my only meeting nowadays. But also, I've lived on the Cape for almost 50 years and have always been involved with helping our environment.
Thank you, Janet.
I'm Helen Miranda Wilson, appointed to this Executive Council, Shellfish Advisory Board 9 years, Select Board 10 years, Zoning Board, Planning Board, briefly Housing Authority, blah, 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 and happy to be involved. I've been involved with the four MOUs that exist over many years, and grew up here. I'm 76 and I've been here my whole life, not living here year round my whole life. Thank you.
Thanks, Helen. And my name is Carol Ridley, Project Coordinator for the Herring River Restoration Project. So here's our agenda for today. We'll start off with the approval of minutes of December 14th, 2023, which was the last meeting of the Herring River Executive Council. Those meetings can be approved by consensus at the will of the group.
I'm okay with them.
Yes, me too. I
Yes.
approve.
All right. It looks like unanimous consent on the approval of the minutes of December 14th. Thank you very much. So now we're going to move to some project updates, and I'm pleased to welcome Wes Stinson to start us off with a brief update of the Chequesset Neck Bridge construction project. Welcome, Wes.
Hi, welcome. Thank you for welcoming me. I forget the last time we met. Was it in the fall, I believe?
December, yes.
December, right? So in December, we were up to a certain point where we were waiting on some utility work to get done, coordination with Eversource and Verizon. And if anybody's ever worked with the utility company at their own personal house, sometimes this takes a little while and can be a slog. Is a word I would describe it as, but we are slogging through it. And Eversource did show up last week. The power has been transitioned from the existing poles that go across the Chequesset Neck River dike over to the temporary bridge. Verizon showed up today, and they are transferring all of their lines from the existing poles over to the temporary bridge today and tomorrow. And it is very exciting that we anticipate opening the temporary bridge next week. So we're eyeing for Tuesday to get that done. So there'll be a lot of work happening between now and then to kind of, put the finishing touches on all the components that need to go into place. But that is our big push right now. And once we get that temporary bridge open, we can really kind of crack into the next phase of construction, which is really the permanent phase of construction. Everything that we've done up until this point, a year of work is effectively temporary work to get us, just give us access to the site. So as soon as we get traffic over the temporary bridge, we will begin our stage 2A work. And that's going to be focusing on, if you can picture the bridge, it's got three bays. We are going to be starting on the southern end of the bridge. So if you're coming from town out to Chequesset Neck, road out to the river, it's the first section you're going to hit coming down the hill. So we're going to start there by working downstream of the dike, installing stone armor. And this is, about a 5 foot thick pad of, large stone and boulders that's effectively going to serve as scour protection, because when the velocity of that water going through the newly installed water control structure, you know, starts pushing, you know, you don't want this the sediment and silts to get pushed around and scour and potentially undermine any of that work zone. So that's step one, is get that stone armor scour protection installed. And we do it in phases, in the sense that we'll start on that southern half, and, you know, water will continually flow as it has, and as it will continue to do so for this phase of construction through the existing culverts. We'll get the stone armor installed, and then we'll kind of tighten up our work zone to just that southern bay of work. And we'll start to, you know, excavate in there. And that's when we'll start a dewatering process, and we'll really start to, you know, form, pour, drive piles, and build that first bay of the permanent bridge. And this work will take us right into the fall of 2024 here. So the next, you know, year ahead of us is going to be with heavy focus on that first southern bay. And we'll meet, I'm sure, before we start the next phase. So I won't go too much further down the line. But that's where we stand. It's very exciting. I think getting traffic over the temporary bridge is a big milestone for us. We're looking forward to it. As always, there's many little hurdles, permitting hurdles, and all the things that come along with construction in such a nice area and such a beautiful resource. So we're working through all those, and I'm looking forward to the next update with, you know, bigger and better news. So if anybody has any specific questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Thank you very much, Wes. Do council members have any questions for Wes before we move on to other updates?
I see Helen. Do you have your hand up?
Yeah, I'm afraid I do. So, Wes, there is existing, armoring, buttressing with, you know, introduced stone now. Mm-hmm. Right? Is the scour that always happens when you have something rigid along a shoreline, there's a certain amount of scour now to the right and left of where that stone is now. Is the stone that is going to be put in place that very much different? In other words, is the shore going to get carved out from scour more than it is at this point? Does anybody have a good guess?
No, we don't anticipate that. I think the only location where we anticipate scour is actually on the benefit zone on the bottom of the river there, where these water control gates are. And I'll see if I can share my screen here. It's people can see that. Here we are. So what you're seeing here is this is the existing river. This red line that I'm showing is effectively, and I'm guessing this is the stone that you're seeing. Are you speaking to Helen? This stone exists.
Yeah, right there. Right. There. Yeah.
So what we're going to do is this area outlined in red. This is all going to be newly installed scour protection on the bottom. And then if you're talking like more scour out on the lateral edges, we don't anticipate that at all.
Okay. Thank you for answering the question.
Yep.
Any other questions from the council to Wes before we move on? All right. Thank you very much, Wes, for that update.
You're welcome.
Go back to the presentation.
Carol, I'm sorry, I don't have a question for Wes necessarily, but are you at some point today, are we going to sort of talk about the components of the project and how they're layering together? I'm just curious. When I got here in November and December, it seemed like Wes was ready to go, right? So, but we've been waiting for these utility lines, right? So now we're about 4 months behind where we thought we were going to be. And I'm interested in understanding what those dominoes might look like. Like, does this push something else off? And I don't have the other members may have a much clearer vision of sort of all of the pieces, but I'm still trying to wrap my brain around how they all layer together. So mm-hmm. I don't know if that's something we're going to talk about later in the discussion, if there's an opportunity in this minute, or maybe that's the next meeting, but it would help me to just understand, does this 4 month delay, how does that ripple into the rest of the project, or does it?
Thank you, Jennifer. That's a really good question. I don't have any detailed schedule or critical path to share with you today, but what I can say is, so you know, for example, we're going to talk in a minute about progress, proceeding with the Mill Creek water control structure, which is another major project component getting underway. Certainly in terms of rippling effect from this delay, it is perhaps most significant in terms of when the start of restoration can actually happen. And from that, also the schedule and sequence of vegetation clearing that is associated in preparation for restoration. So, and Tim can speak to this as well, Tim Smith, who's on the meeting, but, you know, we had a schedule and sequence for initial vegetation clearing, clearing of woody vegetation in the area that's expected to be first inundated during the first year or two of tidal restoration. And part of that included clearing of Phragmites, which had been scheduled for next winter, I believe, which now has to be backed off because we can't cut the Phragmites unless we know the tidal restoration is going to happen right after that, so that we don't have them regrowing. So that's probably the most significant impact of this particular delay. It won't necessarily delay progress on the Mill Creek water control structure or the progress we're making on the low roads development. But certainly the timing of tidal restoration. One of the things that we're exploring with the contractor is, you know, the point at which it would be possible to introduce restoration, possibly even during certain stages of the construction process. But these are complicated questions, but are being explored actively because they could affect the fabrication of certain elements that they are using to control water during the construction period. So that's a partial answer, I think, to your question. And I would invite Tim, if you're on, Tim, if there's anything more you would want to say about that sequencing of vegetation clearing as it relates to, you know, the timing of construction. Is there anything that you want to add to that, Tim?
Well, I think you said it pretty well, Carol. Really, the Phragmites is the most closely related to that. You know, I think everyone is aware how Phragmites is a very aggressively growing plant, and we want to make sure we cut it as close as immediately prior to flooding it with salt water so it doesn't grow back. And what we know of the schedule right now, it seems like if we cut it, it would be next winter, next, say, December, we would start that. That was with the understanding that it would be flooded, you know, within months after that, with that not seeming happening, we're going to put that off. We may, however, substitute some of that Phragmites cutting with more woody plant cutting, such as been going on. So maybe sort of swapping some of those activities, that the trees were less concerned about growing back quickly compared to the Phragmites. So that's the most visible or dramatic impact on the schedule as far as things that I'm involved with.
Happy, thank you. And I didn't mean to take us off the agenda, Carol. I'm just still trying to wrap my brain on all the layers.
No, it's a great question. And I think we'll be in a better position, I think, at the next meeting, which would be, I believe, June, to have more detail on the schedule. And that would be a good agenda item to bring to the Executive Council at that time. Thank you. All right, so we'll move on to quick review of some other project elements, notably the Mill Creek water control structure, which is very exciting to see this important project element getting underway. The contractor Classic Site Solutions is currently working on a number of kind of pre-construction steps in terms of, you know, permitting, pre-construction permitting requirements and things of that nature. I think it might be a little bit premature to say that site clearing is happening, although Jeff, perhaps you could address that current status, but the project is pretty much on schedule for a spring 2025 completion. Jeff, any more you would want to add on that?
No, I don't think so, Carol. I think you're right. I think they're just waiting to get final approval on a couple of permits before they can start clearing. But sounds like they hope to start that pretty soon.
Very soon. Great.
Yeah.
So very, very exciting to get this this important project underway. Of course, noted here the support from Natural Resource Conservation Service of the USDA and also the National Park Foundation as the funding sources for this project element. Otherwise, work is continuing on the final design for the low-lying road elevation and culvert replacements. So just to refresh everyone, there's about 2 miles, non-contiguous miles of roadway segments that are to be elevated and 7 culverts to be replaced, which includes the a new water control structure at the Poldike Creek crossing. And so that final design work is underway. You may recall in December, we were mentioning that some additional geotechnical borings were being taken to confirm the compressibility of the substrate. I'm just going to ask folks, if you are not speaking, to please put yourselves on mute. We're getting a little bit of background noise here. So please mute yourself if you're not speaking. Thank you. Great. So thank you. So that work is completed, and that information is being factored into the final design process. One other, additional sort of analytical check we're doing at this point is just mindful of the recent flooding events that have occurred. I'm sure everyone's well aware, and just observing the patterns of water flow during those events and using that information to just, do a double check in terms of the proposed design elevations to make sure everything looks complete there. So that's another kind of safety check we're doing in terms of the design work to finalize the plans that will be used as the basis for bid specifications. I've included the working schedule here. It's still an estimated schedule for completion of final design of the low-lying road elevations and culvert replacements this spring, with the potential for bidding to start sometime in the summer or fall, and in construction either the fall or winter of 2025. So again, a lot of steps that need to be taken in order for that schedule to be completed, but that is currently the working schedule that we are focused on as a project team. One key component of this is completion of agreements for the land transfer between the town and the seashore. So in many instances, the low road work, because it's elevating the roads, is increasing the reach of the embankments on either side. In some cases, those are private properties for which the town has already obtained easements from property owners for that temporary construction work, as well as any permanent changes to grading or other features that may be permanent on those private properties. So those easements are in hand. But with respect to the seashore, where those impacts occur on seashore property, it is not possible or legal for the Park Service to grant an easement of that nature. So that requires an actual land transfer, which is a rather involved process. It's been in the works for some time, but that also needs to move forward in order for us to, proceed with the construction schedule that's outlined above. And progress is being made there, and we hope will continue to be made in the coming weeks. So I'll move on to, Helen, go ahead. Oops, I think you might be muted.
This is the appropriate agenda item to bring up the fact that the town of Wellfleet has an issue caused by the overwash, which is that there are roads, public ways, that are needed for emergency access. Although, thank God, Coles Neck Road, you can get to the dump. But there has been some discussion in the Herring River technical team about, I wish Jay was here, Jay Norton, who's the head of the DPW.
I believe Jay is here.
Oh, he is here.
He's okay. Here.
I'm and, here, Ellen.
Yeah, so you'll check me on this, but I have a question first. My understanding is the permits, at least, for the low-lying roads as planned by the project, which would elevate the low-lying roads quite a bit. Those permits are already in place. Is that true? Carol?
Yes, that's correct. The permits for the low-lying road elevations and culvert replacements are in hand.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I'm just checking what I think I know so that everybody has in their brain.
Mm-hmm.
What is needed is for the select board and town meeting also to approve the land swap before that can happen. And I understand that. I mean, it's been in the works for a long time and it wasn't addressed as, you know, immediately. A lot's been going on. So the select board, it would be desirable, in my opinion, given that town meeting is now 2 months away, to have an article about that that was specific enough for the town to vote on this swap. Because here's where I'm going with this. The town, if it doesn't do something about these roads, never mind the project, let's say the project wasn't even going on, the town would have to, in my opinion, as a former select board member, et cetera, be liable if they didn't some way address at least some of those access roads, call it Ultra Road or Boundbrook Island Road, whatever you want, didn't address the fact that they get flooded and it can take quite a few days for them to drain. And I, having listened to discussion of this and understanding that it really has to happen sooner than, you know, the steady schedule that the restoration has had because of the overwash. Mm-hmm. That's out of our control, and it's probably going to happen again. The three last spring tides, there's been flooding. And having it have to happen twice, in other words, a temporary fix that wasn't up to the height of the low-lying roads being raised by the project, right? To have it only part way, in other words, to have those roads worked on twice, never mind the cost, some of which would be to the town, of course. I don't get it. I would hope, in my opinion, knowing quite a bit about it at this point, that the town's administration and select board and whoever else would focus on having the whole job done once, up to the standards, up to the, you know, plan for the actual project. So it didn't have to be fixed by the town and then raised further, because sea level rise is going to keep going up. We're going to keep having these overwashes. And I think that if it was very focused on, if the article to do the land swap was gotten on the warrant, it could happen. Jay, I've said what I think from everything I've learned, but I really hope that you address this in some way so that people can hear what the DPW needs, because I bow down before that. Thank you.
So before, and I certainly would invite Jay to comment, but I'll just make a couple of remarks, Helen, you know, to follow on some of the points that you've made. First, I just, and I should have noted this in the slide when I reviewed it, but we are in the process of working on a potential town meeting article dealing with the land swap. I mean, there's that, you know, there are many pieces of that that still need to be falling into place, but there is a potential that will be on the annual town meeting warrant, with, you know, that's our goal, but still work to be done there. So I just wanted to make that point. You got ahead of us a little bit in terms of the sequence of discussion this afternoon, but we did want to just kind of acknowledge, because I think it's something that's certainly top of mind for lots of folks, the conditions that are occurring due to sea level rises in Cape Cod Bay. exacerbated by the timing of certain wind conditions and storm conditions, totally driven by Mother Nature and not due to restoration project activities, but nevertheless causing this persistent flooding that's been observed on some of the road segments that are indeed intended to be elevated as part of the restoration project. So, and just to note too, I think some of that persistent flooding, it's been acknowledged, is due to the fact that the system, because it includes a lot of pinch points and tidal restrictions within the Herring River floodplain, is preventing that drainage from occurring, and the flooding is more persistent than it might otherwise be if the drainage were allowed to occur. So long term, I think what you're pointing out, Helen, is the restoration project, because it will elevate the road segments and remove those restrictions that are preventing the drainage, provides long-term relief for this condition. What's also going on right now are very detailed discussions about exploration of options to, you know, either expedite or partially complete some of the elevation or address some of the drainage restrictions. And there are permitting considerations, and there are funding considerations, and there are timing considerations and procurements considerations and many other factors that we're looking at. So I just wanted to provide that context for some of the folks who maybe have not been sitting in on the detailed discussions that Helen, that you've been a part of. But I do want to give Jay a chance to weigh in if you want to make a comment about this, Jay, at this time.
Sure. Thank you, Carol. And thanks, Helen, for those comments. I completely concur with that thought process. You know, obviously, the best scenario would to be to get in there and do this once and not have to go multiple times. And, you know, then it gets complicated with funding sources and so on and permitting and all that. The only issue that I see with this is the timing of it. You know, like Carol said, we are trying to move things along quickly with drafting warrant articles, and I don't want to speak on behalf of Jeff from the seashore, but also seeing if we can parse out some of the land swap issues that relate to, you know, the areas that we really need to focus on now, to see if we can get those process before the rest. So, you know, we are looking at every single alternative that we possibly can. It's just, we're getting a lot of concerned homeowners out on Boundbrook Island Road West, in particular for this upcoming summer season. A lot of those folks rent their homes and, you know, rely on that income. So I'm just a little weary if we can get all the ducks in a row and make this happen and implement it by the summer season. So that's the issue I'm dealing with, you know, at the DPW level. It's basically a timing issue, and we're trying everything we can to put the pieces together. So we'll continue to work diligent on this, and just so everybody knows, we're obviously working this out, and we know it's a problem.
One more quick question, yes or no answer. It was unclear to me whether or not, if the town has to do, using some of our precious Chapter 91 funds, by the way, if the town has to do a temporary lift to some of the roads, right? And perhaps fixing culverts too. If that has to be re-permitted, or if that activity can happen under the existing permits for the Herring River project, yes or no? Would we have to go through another permitting process, that is to say the town, to do that?
You want to answer that, Carol?
Yeah, thanks, Jay. Sure. Helen, that unfortunately we don't have a yes or no answer for you on that. We are going to be talking with permitting agencies to consult with them on that very question, but we can't say definitively one way or another.
Because that could be more time, more money. And what I'm saying is, let's just cut to the chase and do it. But I understand all the difficulties. I really do. Thank you.
All right. Thanks. All right. And thank you, Jay. Good. All right. Let's move on then to just a couple of quick permitting updates. There's been a bit of activity here. I did, you know, just list for your, you know, reference the permits that are in hand that have been acquired over the recent years. And you may recall when we met last December, we noted that there were two additional permits that needed to be more or less updated. One is the 401 water quality certification that's issued by the Massachusetts DEP. And the reason that needed to be updated is because our 404, Section 404 of the Water Clean Water Act authorization from the U.S. Army Corps, which was an authorization under general permits that expired in 2023, we needed to get reauthorization under the new set of general permits that was issued in, I think, April of 2023. So right now, the project still has authorization. Its authorization was extended another year because the work was already underway. But we did need to apply to the Army Corps, which we have done. We expect to hear back from the Corps really any day now with reauthorization under the new general permit. So that's another five-year authorization to complete the construction work. And DEP issued the new updated water quality certification last month. So things are moving along as planned with those additional permit authorizations that were needed. So so that's all moving to plan. I just, you know, this is not necessarily new information, but just to remind everyone of the scope of funding that's been assimilated for the project. So we have, you know, all the various funding sources in place for the project elements we're talking about in grant administration with support from environmental partners and Clifton Larson Allen providing that additional grant administration support to the town for the administration of those construction related grants. And more progress on the front with marsh management. So vegetation clearing, you may have noticed, has been continuing in recent weeks with the completion of work at Doug Harbor and also an additional approximately 62 acres that is part of the area that would be flooded in the first year of tidal restoration. I think it's fair to say it's been completed, or that work may be completed this week. So that is all on schedule. As we noted earlier, the 45 acres of Phragmites that would need to be cleared prior to the start of restoration. The exact timing of that clearing is not known at this point because of the change in sequence and not change in sequence, but the change in schedule and the delay at the construction of the bridge site. So as Tim noted earlier, the exact timing of that clearing is yet to be determined. There's also progress on the front of two pilot projects that are in design for marsh management, which is dealing with the presence of spoil berms where they're unwanted, channels where they're unwanted, and the desire to restore the original channel network, and also to proceed with some ongoing research in concert with the USGS on the potential for salt marsh restoration to sequester carbon and address ocean alkalinity. So those pilot projects are in design. We are having conversations with Massachusetts DEP. They're not part of our current phase one permits, so those activities will be permitted separately, but we are already in conversations with Massachusetts DEP on that front, and permitting will be initiated in this calendar year. Tim, any more you would want to add on either the vegetation clearing or marsh management?
No, Carol, I think you covered it very well.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Unless there's questions, that's good. Yep.
Okay. All right. I will move on to just a note that as well as
Carol, Carol, I think Helen has a question.
Oh, I'm sorry, Helen. I with the slides up, I can't see everyone at one time, so I apologize. Go ahead.
I yapped. So just to be, so everybody at this meeting, and there are 27 of us here, am I correct in knowing that the work that's done on the Duck Harbor area, which was caused by the washover, is not being paid for as part of the project? Am I correct in thinking that?
The Duck Harbor vegetation clearing was paid for in part by funds from ducks from the National Wetlands Conservation Act NACA grant, which is a U.S. Fish and Wildlife grant that was funneled through Ducks Unlimited, and in part although that's not restoration caused by restoration, it was a test case for studying how the marsh responded to, you know, the removal of vegetation and the restoration of tidal flow. So it's providing sort of an incubator and a lab for understanding those changes that are going to facilitate further stages of vegetation clearing and marsh restoration. I think there also was some National Park Foundation funding involved in that as well, if I'm not mistaken, Tim and Jeff.
That's correct. And yeah. I see Tim's got his hand up, so I'll defer to him, but there's some other fund sources in there as well. But just to clarify, Helen, none of the research that Carol just mentioned is being funded directly by the project. That's all separate sources, but I'll defer to Tim.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, the duck part, I guess you can look at this in different ways, and the work that's been completed at Duck Harbor, if it wasn't done now with the funding that was available, however you characterize that, it would have to have been done later. If the overwash hadn't occurred, the vegetation was still going to die, and then it would have been part of the project more directly. So, you know, you can interpret that however you want, but we thought it was a good opportunity to use existing funding for something we knew was going to have to happen at one time or another.
Yeah, as far as I'm concerned, it's one big ecosystem, okay? But that's the kind of thing for people to be clear about the funding, which is very carefully managed. Second question, those birds, are they going to be moved completely out of the area or spread out on the existing marsh?
Well, we're not quite sure. It's another funding question. We're not quite sure if there's funding available to remove them all. Eventually, they all will be removed. In this project we're designing now, we're trying to balance out how much we can remove with how much money is available. But the goal in the long term is to use all that material in the marsh to address subsided areas and raise elevation. Might not all happen at one time.
Just to be clear, you know, for anybody listening, I'm correct in thinking they were created originally when the mosquito ditching or the drainage ditching was done back in the day. Those berms were out the ditches and the berms were left. Is that correct?
Well, yeah, that section of the river was channelized.
Yeah, that's what
1920s.
Yeah.
So it was actually more than just ditching. It was actually rerouting the river in an artificial channel.
Right.
It was great, and that's where the berms came from.
Thank you.
Excellent. Great. Thank you, Tim and Helen. So just in this next slide, just highlighting that with all of the construction activity that is very visible to us, with all of the vegetation clearing that's visible to us, there's also a good amount of monitoring work that is ongoing, continuing to gather data about conditions in the system, guide some of the construction activities as regards rare species to ensure protection during construction activities. So that work is all ongoing. Some of it is managed through the Park Service. Some of it is managed under the auspices of the Friends of Herring River. But all an integral part of gathering information that is going to be needed to guide adaptive management throughout the restoration of the Herring River once all of the infrastructure is in place and ready to go. So always important for us to keep in mind these essential ecological monitoring activities. Right. So I'm having a little slow release there on my slide transitions. So that concludes the updates. And if there are no further questions about any project related activities, I would move us on to the next agenda item, which is consideration of a new slate of Herring River stakeholder group members. And I see several stakeholder group members here with us this afternoon. So welcome to you all and thank you for joining. Just to remind everyone, the stakeholder group is an entity that was formed by the Executive Council back in 2017 to provide kind of broad scale community input on implementation issues. So there is a list of, I think, 19 slots on the stakeholder group that represent all various, you know, interests having to do with recreation, restoration, conservation, shellfish, businesses, property owners and sub-basins, and more. And at the last meeting, we advised the Executive Council that some of the appointments had expired or were close to expiring. And you asked Bill Biwenga, who is the chair and is with us this afternoon, to reach out to existing members and check to see if they are interested in continuing to serve, and if not, providing additional candidates to fill the slate. So, Bill, if you don't mind, I'd like to just hand it over to you maybe to you know, introduce the slate, and then we can open it up to the council for questions and a possible vote to appoint these members.
Well, thanks, Carol. I don't know, did you pass around the slate to the members of the executive committee? Oh, great. Perfect.
Yes, the members of the executive committee did receive the slate and also just a copy of the charge as a reminder of the scope of the group.
That's great.
And this is just for everyone's benefit. This is just the list of folks that Bill reached out to and who responded.
Generally speaking, I think most of the people signed up again. They're willing to commit their time and input to the project for another year or two. And there were some vacancies that still exist. I think one of the upper areas of the project is still vacant and needs to get a person involved. But for the most part, most of the people were willing to remain on board. One of the other vacancies, unfortunately, Mo Barakas isn't spending as much time here in Wellfleet, so he thought perhaps it would be better to have someone else appointed as the co-chair. And I think that's a good idea so that we've got, you know, some kind of continuity in leadership. So you might consider having as a co-chair somebody who's already been involved for a little while so that they understand what's going on and so forth. But I'm going to leave that up to the executive committee to decide if this is currently a suitable slate of membership, and you can vote on it as you think necessary, and we'll take it from there.
Thank you, Bill, and thank you. I just want to extend thanks to Bill, who's done a dynamite job as chair of the stakeholders group and really did a lot of work to pull together this slate for this afternoon. So I really appreciate Bill's leadership. Helen, I see your hand raised.
I'm afraid so. I believe, I'm not looking at the charge right now, but choice of chair and vice chair is up to a given committee. All groups in town are called committees, all municipal groups in our charter. In other words, that's a position that you all have to decide internally. That's true of all the other regulatory boards, for example. The other thing is, and this is embarrassing, what exactly is Upper Bound Brook Subbasin? I mean, it's crazy. I don't know exactly what that is, but what is it? Any one of you, Tim, Jeff, Carol, I don't care.
I think it's the Truro portion of the Upper Bound Brook area.
Above Old County Road?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you. Sorry, it's embarrassing that I don't know that. Okay.
So I think for today, the request of the Executive Council is to vote the terms that will establish these members for the, you know, the specified terms. So folks were asked whether they would feel more comfortable with 1 or 2 year term. There are two scheduled meetings of the stakeholder group. One will be in May and one in November. Those would be virtual meetings so that if folks are traveling or have other constraints on their time, it wouldn't be a reason for them not to be able to participate. So if there are no further questions, I would invite you either by consensus or by motion, if you wish, to confirm these appointments so that the stakeholder group can be fully constituted and continue its work. Debbie? Oops, you're on mute, I believe.
Oh, sorry. I said I support consensus and I'm happy with the slate presented.
Thank you.
Same with me. I agree with the slate.
Thank you, Janet.
Sorry.
Go ahead, Helen.
Where are the nominees? Where are the people who were, I just see the positions, vacancies for positions. Where are the people who might have them? It's in an email.
Okay, so if you can, if my screen is showing, there are positions which, you know, represent Wealthy Conservation Trust, Barbara Carey would be the representative. Is that, can you see this?
Yeah, but where are the people who would be coming in new? That's what I don't see. I see all the different people who are already on it.
So these are folks who Bill reached out to you and agreed to reserve. So they're kind of re-upping.
Yes.
And then there are a few. So Jordan Mora, who's here with us today, is a new representative for APCC. We have Jeff Stefani, is a new representative for the business community. I think those are the two new members. Most folks were interested in continuing to serve.
No, I saw that. I just couldn't see the new members in the email that I've got up on my screen. Forgive me. Maybe you all saw that.
Bill, did you want to say more about them?
Yeah, there's also a new member. The Audubon Society has a replacement for Melissa Lowe's new.
Yes, and I don't see Melissa on this list, and that might just be an error on my part. When I did a screen on this, I might have missed that name, so that she would also be added to the list. Thank you for bringing that up, Bill.
So, Carol, I'll just throw in that I did see Melissa's name on here.
Oh there it is. Yes, Melissa's right there.
So okay.
Yeah, and it's on the one you sent us.
And also, but she should be new, I think. That's the change that should, it says yes, but she should be a new, it should be. But good, she is listed there, but I didn't.
So, yeah, so here's the thing. There are three people. Why am I getting this echo? Forgive me, I would prefer to do appointments with a vote. It all sounds good. Somebody still needs to come forward from the Shellfish Advisory Committee, the Wellfleet Shellfish Advisory Committee, right? But we have three people who are new, are offering it. And I like votes for appointments because it's a nice, clear thing, you know, and it's kind of a verbal commitment. So May I make a motion to vote on this, which we have to do first here because of the way the MOU is built. That was my idea.
All right. Is there a second to Helen's motion to vote on the slate?
Wow.
Yeah, I'll second it.
All right. So there's a second to the motion. So this vote is just to vote whether to vote. So the motion is to vote on the slate. Executive Council members who are in favor of voting on the slate, please indicate by saying aye or raising your hand.
Helen, aye.
Jeff, aye.
Jen, aye.
All right. So that's 1, 2, 3. And members opposed to voting, opposed to the motion, so not supporting voting on the slate.
Debbie.
Okay. And Janet, are you voting? Okay. And then I guess abstaining. Janet, are you abstaining? Did we lose Janet? All right. Well, we have 3 in favor, which is a majority. So we will go ahead and vote. So we would need a motion then to on the slate.
I move that the three people that give me the 3 names, please.
Well, I think all of the terms are expired, Helen. So everyone needs to be appointed. It's not just the new folks. It's the entire slate needs to be appointed. And it would be important to indicate a duration of the term, say to, I think you extended the terms to the end of this month. So maybe a year or however you choose to do it. But you could extend the appointments to 1 year or 2 years as indicated on the sheet here. But we should include the duration of term in your motion.
Yes, and starting on what day?
April 1st of right. 2024 through either March 31st of 2025 or of 2026.
So how's this motion? I move that as of April 1st, all people on the slate as included in our packet for mm-hmm. the Herring River stakeholders. What's the G stand for?
Group.
Group. Have their terms renewed, mm-hmm. including the newer members.
Okay.
Does renewed that?
Yeah, renewed as in for 1 year term, 2 year term as indicated.
Yeah. Okay. Or 2 year term or 1 year term as indicated.
Mm-hmm. All right. So the motion is that as of April 1st, 2024, all people indicated on the slate of Herring River stakeholder group members provided in your packet for today's meeting would have their terms renewed for a 1 or 2 year term as indicated.
Including the new members, did you say that?
Including new members. Thank you.
Second. Okay. No, I made it. So somebody has to say. Okay.
Helen made the motion. Is there a second?
Jeff seconds.
Thank you, Jeff. Okay. All in favor of the motion?
Helen, I.
Jeff, I.
Debbie, I.
Jen, I.
Jen, I. And Janet, are you? I see your name here. Janet, are you voting on the motion? Okay, maybe she's having some audio difficulties. Anyone opposed to the motion? And any abstentions? Okay, it looks like 4, and I'm not sure where Janet's vote lies, but the motion does carry. So congratulations to stakeholder group members for your reappointment, and thank you for agreeing to serve.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Bill.
You bet.
All right, and I'm just going to stop sharing at this point because there's really nothing exciting on the further slides. But the next agenda item now is any member announcements that stakeholder group members may wish to make at this time. Any announcements? Okay, hearing none, we'll move on. And the next item is public comment. So if there is any public comment at this time. And I see Bill's hand went up and then Laura.
I'll defer to Laura. Ladies first.
Thanks, Bill. Yeah. I have a question from another abutter up here in the upper Polkite Creek area. And he was wondering what's going to be the fate of the material that's part of the temporary bridge construction. I'm imagining, of course, the components that are part of the bridge above water are going to be reused someplace, but I believe he's wondering what's going to happen to material that's in the supports and so forth. Is it going to be hauled out of here? There.
So my understanding is the temporary bridge is going to be deconstructed and then the pilings are going to be cut flush with the substrate. Any of the armoring that's been done is part of the permanent structure, but if Wes is still here, Wes, is there any more you would add about the fate of materials with the temporary bridge?
Yeah, sorry, I had to jump on the road, so I'm pulled over here. So the material for the temporary bridge will all be removed, and technically per the contract, the contractor owns all of the components that make up the temporary bridge. So that's going to be removed. And as Carol noted, the piles that are in the ground are going to be cut off at the kind of the benthic surface and left in place. And that's the reason there is that the Mass DOT and the bridge engineering, you don't want to leave a void in the ground. So you actually don't want to remove those after the fact, because then you have a big kind of hole in the ground that could allow for shifting underneath. So those are going to be cut off in place. Another component that perhaps you're asking about is the material right now that comprises the dike, because that's a lot of that's going to be excavated out. And I was talking to MIG, and there's still some kind of consideration if that material, you know, where that can go, and if MIG, wants to take it and have them haul it away, or if there's any use the town has it to reuse it anywhere. That's being discussed, but that's kind of in a nutshell what's going to happen with those components.
Thanks, Wes. Laura, does that answer your question?
Mm-hmm. Yes, it does. Thanks. I'll pass it on.
All right. Thanks. Bill, are you ready?
I have a couple of questions. Maybe Tim Smith might be able to shed some light on the first one, somebody else. And it has to do with the modeling that is taking place and was put in place some time ago. The question that I have, generally speaking, how are the models keeping up with the expectations in a kind of a general sort of way? And then in addition to that and beyond that, is given the inundation that took place in Duck Harbor last weekend, is that going to be able to provide us with some new information or new criteria by which we might be able to expand the accuracy going forward of the models? Tim or anybody else at the Park Service might possibly have some input on that.
Tim, are you still with us?
Yeah, I'm in a car. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Well enough?
Yes, we can hear you. Mm-hmm.
All right, thanks, Bill. So the first part of that, as far as the existing model, the model was developed to simulate the new structure with the new tie gates and to look at, you know, different configurations of the new tie gates. And so as far as that goes, I mean, really, been no change, right? Nothing has happened. The new tie gates don't exist yet. The new structure is not in place. So there's no real opportunity, there's no real scenario that is comparable to anything that's been modeled to date. So we have really nothing. I mean, obviously changes have taken place with Duck Harbor and things like that, but that wasn't the intent of the model when it was developed going on now 15 years ago. So we really don't know. We really don't have any new data that's comparable to any of the output from the model to make that assessment right now. Does okay. that answer that part?
Yeah, thanks, Tim. I appreciate that. The question that I have then going forward is I noticed that there was an awful lot of water over the weekend flowing through the culvert that's on High Toss Road going towards the dike. And I don't know whether or not that's going to alter your schedule for any of the brush removal. I noticed that there's an awful lot of the trees and so forth that were taken down along High Toss in the last few days. Thanks for that, doing that. And so I was wondering what in this particular neighborhood is going to be going on. Is that water flow going to change anything in terms of scheduling?
So as far as the restored flow of water, that would be driven by any changes to the tide gates. That's really all contingent on the construction schedule and when the structure will be in place to be manipulated. All this other work is getting prepared for when that can happen. So I would say that it's not really driving any decisions about the construction of the project elements or the management of the tie gate, but maybe Carol can expand on this. There are, and I think Jay mentioned it as well earlier, there are a lot of thought being given to and discussion about things that could be done by the town as far as the problems with the roads and things like that, but that's sort of unrelated to the, deliberate plan for letting water in through the new bridge.
With the inundation, is that going to give you more information going forward if and when we get started with phase two?
Well, it's given us more information about how the presence of salt water in these areas changes things. I mean, that's the real value that we've seen in the sort of scientific merit of putting considerable resources into studying Duck Harbor, because it gives us that kind of precursor example of what we would expect, when we can open the tie gates at the bridge. But it's not really bearing on what we expect sort of hydrologically from that process.
Okay, that then takes me to some questions that I have. Maybe Gabby Sikalski can offer some ideas on how this salt water coming in from Duck Harbor is going to potentially alter the mosquito situation later this spring and summer.
So good question. And I don't know if I don't see Gabby still with us. Oh, yes, I do. Okay, but Gabby, I don't know if you want to offer a quick comment. Don't want to put you on the spot here, but if you do want to, you may. And then we can move on to other questions.
Sure. I'm very concerned, and we'll be talking with the seashore about permitting as we go forward. But yeah, I'm concerned. We'll see what happens. And we're willing to look at other options if there's anything else that we can help with increasing drainage, making things move more quickly. I'd be happy to assist.
Great. And we certainly don't. Jeff, did you want to comment?
Yeah, I just wanted to mention something really quickly to Gabby. So Gabby, I am starting to work on some permits, and Tim and I have been talking a little bit about how we want to approach it. But I also wanted to make sure that we drew your attention to something that there's actually another little overwash to the south of the access at Duck Harbor. And I wasn't sure if you guys were aware of that. And so that may be an area that even has less drainage than the main area of Duck Harbor does. So
yeah, we've been up there this past weekend. We've got some pictures. Yeah, okay. Aubrey and Bart have both been there. But thank you. Yeah. Keeping me informed is great. Thanks.
Yep. Okay.
So we don't want to get too far into the issue because this is just an opportunity to raise questions. But thank you guys for that. And Bill, are you all set or do you have any other questions?
I think that should do it for now. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks, Bill. And Gail, I see you have your hand up as well.
Yeah. Hi, Carol. My question isn't as good a question as Bill's questions were, but I was on the Wellfleet website the other day with a few minutes to spare before another Zoom meeting, and I started poking it around, and I got to the Herring River part of it under project management and coordination, and it said that project management and coordination support is provided by the nonprofit Friends of Herring River. And I'm wondering, is that current? Is that the state of things now, or has that changed?
So no, that's current. I mean, so the Friends of Herring River administers a lot of different contracts for consultants like myself and others, and other work that's being done on modeling and adaptive management. So the Friends still plays a heavy role in terms of funding through funding it receives directly from the Division of Ecological Restoration, but also I don't see Krista here at the moment, do I? I don't want to speak for the Friends, but as well as two subawards that the Friends have with the town of Wellfleet for use of grant funds that have been granted to the town for construction activities, but it's work such as permit compliance and adaptive management work that is not really the sort of non-construction related. So those kinds of activities are still ongoing.
Now I understand it. It's by contract with people like you and other resources. Okay, thank you.
Very good. Al?
Yeah, can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Thank you. This is just a follow-up to Bill's question, and maybe Tim can answer this. What's the order for opening and removing the structure at High Toss vis-a-vis the opening and finishing of the bridge at Chequesset Neck Road? Can you answer that, Tim? Is the culvert going to be open before the construction is finished at the bridge?
I can't really address that. That's part of, I believe that would be contracted through the whole Bull Road construction work. It's kind of bundled with that. It would be part of that larger contract, and I'm not really aware of where that stands and what the sequence of that would be.
I see.
Just to pick up on that, just to because Tim's correct, that so that work as currently envisioned, that the removal of the causeway and the elevation of about 1,000 linear feet of High Toss Road would be incorporated with the low road elevation contracting that the town would do, and there's still some question about the actual sequencing of when certain of those road segments would be elevated. And there was some initial consideration given to putting High Toss sort of at the end of the list rather than the beginning because of the need for the causeway for staging certain marsh management and vegetation clearing activities. Now we're taking a fresh look at that in light of the discussion we had a minute ago about some of the drainage considerations due to the road flooding. There might be a way to achieve both with a little bit more drainage and maintain that access, but those are all still things being worked out.
I see. And from what Tim said is that there hasn't been really any new modeling, that the existing models will hold up. I guess my concern would be with the opening of the culvert at High Toss, we have a hurricane that dumps a ton of water, high water, and we get a huge amount of water coming in from Duck Harbor, and the culvert is now open at High Toss. That I can say observationally that there's already more water building up on the upstream side of the dike than I'm used to seeing. And so what happens if the dike still there or not fully open or the bridge is there, but the restraints are in place? if there's a tremendous amount of water inundating the lower basin coming from not only the direction of the harbor, but coming from Duck Harbor. Has there been any thought about that consideration? Thank you.
Thanks, Al. Tim, did you hear that? I don't know if you want to offer any comment on that.
I guess we're already seeing it. Not a hurricane, but you know, the past 2 months have been, you know, a pretty large amount of water, and what we're seeing there, I mean, I guess you could envision something even larger, but it's kind of been happening in front of our eyes, and you know, you can point to high toss as an issue, which it is, but you know, if that were removed, it just transferred the issue down to Chiquizit, which is now an active construction site. So I think, you know, the real answer is to get the bridge open and draining, you know, increase the drainage as quickly as possible. And that's what we're all working towards. So, you know, to envision extreme high tide with extreme rain, you know, I mean, there's a point where all bets are off, I guess. You know, you can only prepare for the worst to a certain extent. But I think what we've been seeing lately is constructive, for at least how the water behaves, how a system behaves with these very large inputs of water in the current state. Is not optimal.
Yeah.
But as you're pointing out, Tim, in you know, with the bridge and gates operable and structures also at Mill Creek and Poldike Creek, you know, there's the ability to facilitate that drainage out of Herring River and make sure there's no, you know, impacts upstream of those other structures in Mill Creek or Poldike Creek.
Thank you, Tim. Let's get the bridge open as soon as possible.
Yeah, I agree.
All right, great. Any other public comments? All right. Well, that brings us to the end of our agenda for this afternoon. The remaining meetings of the Executive Council in 2024 are June 13th, September 19th, and December 19th. And those are all Thursdays, 3 p.m., and will be virtual. So with that, I thank you all. Thank members of the Executive Council and members of the public and stakeholders group who were with us this afternoon. Appreciate your time and attention and interest in the project. And I would invite an indication or motion or consensus to adjourn.
I'm up for it.
All right.
Second.
Awesome. Great. All right. Well, thank you very much. Have a good afternoon, everyone.
Thank you, Carol. And thank everybody else who spoke. Good job.
Thank you.
To everyone.
Bye-bye.
Thanks all.
Good spring.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.